Notes, January 31st, 1974.
There's one story I heard in New Orleans that I'd like, except I kept, no one else seemed to know about it. So I wanted to ask you about it, whether it's true, and if it is, if you'd elaborate on it, tell the whole story. The story I heard was that you and your husband, or your husband particularly, and you, back in graduate school and in law school, were more or less the leaders of a young group that, in the late 30s, that really went to Washington and got federal action to come down and prosecute the prosecutions that eventually came, and that out of that group developed more or less a cadre of people who went on in Louisiana politics.
Well, Hale was a leader. It was called People's League, and there were a great group of young people who did band together in an organization. Because, you know, there still exists a multifactional organizational situation in politics in Louisiana, and there was no one faction with which they could seem to identify. And they did form a group, as I say, called People's League, and Hale was the chairman or the president or whatever the chief officer was. And
was he in law school at that time?
Yes, he was in law school at the time. And I think that by the time they were formally organized with a name and offices, he may have been out of law school. He graduated from law school in 1937. And perhaps the People's League didn't have any formal outward organization until perhaps 38 or 39. Several state senators, Lawrence Eustis was a member of the group. Chet Morrison, who became mayor and then ambassador to the Organization of American States, was a member, as was his brother Jake. Raymond Monroe, who was not a political office holder, but who at that time was very active in political organizations and all of the ensuing races for governor and mayor, whatever. And yes, I should remember them all. They were just an enormously effective group of young people who felt that they couldn't identify, especially with any particular faction, in order to do a job that they felt was necessary, and that was to establish a feeling that that the government could have integrity and could serve the people well without having any monetary difficulties. And they did some very effective work legally, and they did, of course, talk with various governmental agencies that should have been involved, justice, others, post office. And the first large rally conducted by the People's League was perhaps where there was a grand jury investigation going on, and the grand jurors felt that the district attorney was thwarting their efforts of justice and thorough investigation. From that time on, the People's League was identified as a political entity, a non-factional political entity. And they went on to work effectively and affirmatively then in political organization. The first major effort was the gubernatorial election of 1940. I suppose the campaign started in the fall of 1939, and they were able to elect the governor of their choice, Sam Jones, was his name. And Sam has become a very conservative person in his later years, but he was the candidate of the People's League, and all of us went into very active ward precinct organizational politics. We had ward leaders and precinct captains, poll watchers. We worked very hard on registration, voter registration drives. At that time, you had to register every year in Louisiana. So by the time you had cleansed the rolls, it was time again to start promoting new registration. And I think that it gave all of us a sense of responsibility at the precinct level, which is extremely helpful all through political life. Go back to the essentials. It's there that the issues are explained and the votes registered and the voters translated into the polls and counted. And so that it was a very valuable lesson. And then, of course, there was no longer a need for a separate organization. They had done their work in exposing scandal and trying to reestablish integrity in government and to attract good people into running for office, making themselves available as candidates and officials. And then they went on, and the various members of the League were just absorbed into other factions which they found compatible with their political feelings. Of course, World War II came along, displaced a great many of them.
Was there much, any coming back together after World War II of the same people?
No, but they more or less remained together, I hate to use the word ideologically, but I guess for want of a better word, they seemed to always react more or less the same way to political situations and to political candidates and platforms.
As you think back over the period to 1948, both in terms of Louisiana and the Congress, what are the major changes that you've seen occur, both in terms of the state politics as well as, say, the politics of the Southern delegation here?
As you said, our state politics are different. They're very interesting. I think that generally in state politics, from that time on, there's been a great deal of citizen participation in politics. And some of the major so-called reforms of that era, like permanent registration, and voting machines in larger cities and larger areas, I think, led to more active participation by a larger number of people and from different economic, racial, ethnic backgrounds. That probably could be said about every Southern state.
Did the issues change during that course of time?
Well, of course, the issues are the national issues. They always change, because we were hampered in many years from doing a great many other things because we had this specter of immigration always hanging over our heads. I mean, the South. The South has always produced, I think, remarkable congressional leaders, mostly because people of ability offer themselves for election, and their constituencies in years gone by have kept them in office long enough for them to gain expertise and power and effectiveness in the Congress.
By the way, do you see that changing?
Well, I just think that no seats are any longer safe. You know, there was a time when the various seats were considered safe. It was a one-party state, several of the southern states were, and as you well know, it's changed considerably in the last 7 years.
But isn't the tradition of sending the same person to Congress, is that changing too? Used to be, at least we hear in some southern states, that once you got the nomination of the election and did a fairly good job in southern and sending it, so you could gain the expertise, as you say, or chairmanships.
I don't really think that's true anymore. I think that rapid communication, and particularly television communication, has changed the voting patterns and, well, the lifestyle of a great many people, because instantly, everywhere, all over the country at the same time, people are hearing and the same things, seeing the same things, evaluating the same things from a national viewpoint, projected from a national viewpoint. And there's so many ponderables that go into what makes a campaign click and what, how a person is elected. It's impossible to really pick out any one thing. But in our area, in Louisiana, of course, we have the growth factor. And, you know, people in suburbia more or less have the same problems they have everywhere else, and they have almost the same attitudes that they have in other places. And we've been fortunate in New Orleans that we still have a viable inner city situation that hasn't been completely depleted. And of course, the downtown business district is alive and well. Mostly, I think, because it's the local shopping center to the French Quarter, which is really a year-round residential community, as well as a tourist attraction. But in so many cities, of course, you have all the urban problems of the people who pay taxes fleeing the inner city, and the people who need tax money spent on them, overcrowding the inner city. And the urban problems are so much the same as they are in any other city in the country that it's hard to think of it as a southern problem.
How did the removal of the race issue affect what your husband did and what you're doing now in Congress?
Well, I don't think it's completely removed, but of course it's been removed more and more. I also think that you're going to find, as we have in the last several years, the many constituencies where there's going to be a large percentage of black voters, and you're going to have more black candidates, more black officials. And perhaps this has helped change some of the attitudes of some of the white politicians. I always felt that Hale's great contribution in that regard was that as he grew in thinking and in stature, that he was able to lead people from our own area along with him, and perhaps all of them didn't catch up with him, but he could say that, you know, these are the realities of life and certainly of the future, and to lead them as far as they could go at the time, and also to be able to give courage to other white politicians of the South, that you could take these stands and still be elected. And that they, so often I think people were afraid to take stands that would perhaps defeat them. A very reasonable attitude for a politician.
Neil Pierce is coming out with a new book on the Deep South states that we've seen the proofs of, and it includes an interview with Hale Boggs, in which he referred to his last victory after his votes on civil rights measures, and that he felt it gave himself a new sense of freedom to act, to vote for his convictions, even if he felt in the past they were dangerous. The fact that he was able to survive that election.
Well, I think that he may have said that in the context of what I've just said. Survive to be an example to others that you could survive. I don't think that he, I'm certain that he didn't mean it just about his own survival. Because he often took stands that were, as far as his own survival would be concerned, that he oftentimes disregarded. But I do think that the fact that he had no opponents, everything was going along very well. We had had a year and a half of more or less political stability within the Democratic Party in our area. And he had been able to go home a great deal more than he had been able to in the last several years. And then along came the open housing legislation, and his vote on it almost defeated him. But the fact that in this most serious challenge to his leadership and to his very political survival at the moment was not successful, I think did give him the feeling that the area was ready for him to move forward in the field of civil rights. But I don't know how he could have felt much more free than voting rights and open housing.
How do you and Congressman Treen get along?
Very well. He's been extremely kind and polite and gracious to me whenever there's been any kind of testimonial for me or anything in my honor. He's always participated very actively. We've worked together on two or three projects for our combined districts, which are contiguous, particularly, as you know, on the coastline. And,
does the Louisiana delegation meet as a delegation occasionally?
We meet occasionally. We meet often through our administrative staff members. We try to set up meetings for the delegation and or the administrative assistants for people from home who have various problems or ideas or promotions. And
is it a structure?
They're well attended. Well, it's a loosely structured type of thing, but we cooperate very, very well together. And we have felt this year that it has more impact if we write a joint delegation letter, for instance, on what we consider a serious problem. And this has worked very well. The joint letter always receives immediate attention from the highest official of whatever department to whom it's addressed. And we have had action sometimes, solution to problems as well.
Is this House and Senate meeting?
Yes.
Can you give us one example of that?
Well, for instance, we had a joint meeting on NASA projects, and do have a $60 million contract at Michoud. We were very concerned, of course, last year with the flooding of Mississippi. Concern this year, the water is higher than it was last year at this time, and there were various members of the delegation who felt that certain things weren't happening in their own districts, it should be, and so on. We had a very fine meeting with the Corps of Engineers and other people, and actions were taken to relieve situations and particular districts, and out of the entire meeting evolved a reevaluation by the Corps of Engineers of the data on which the flood insurance rates have been predicated, because they have been predicated on the actuarial rates for flood insurance, been predicated on the Corps' belief that the levies were just paper levies, and here they withstood, you know, the longest, hottest, highest pressure that had ever been recorded and held in our area. So we were able to get the reevaluation of the actuarial rates completed in time to for the implementation of the new bill, and those are two positive examples. I could probably think of a lot more.
Can we talk a little bit about the Southern delegation, if there's such a thing, with a group of congressmen and senators from the 11 southern states, and their influence in the Congress during the last 25 years? Some give us the hypothesis that it's on the increase, some say that the power's on. Is waning, some say it's leveled off. Do you have any thoughts on it?
Well, I think the power has been there, and I would say the southern states have a direct influence on the actions of Congress. The seniority system, of course, placed many Southerners, and we said earlier the people continue to elect a person who was well qualified and who had the desire to remain in office, and naturally they became ranking members or chairman of important committees. Other committees who have business with those committees, of course, naturally deal with them in the nice sense of that word. the resignation or deaths of a lot of the older members of Congress are the long term ones. Have changed the committee picture some. And as a matter of fact, I read recently where the more than half of the House have been in Congress less than 6 years. So that certainly is a change.
So is that reflected in our loss of influence?
The House this year has operated, as you well know, under some new caucus rules, where there's a great deal more openness. All the committee hearings and meetings are open, even lock-up sessions in many committees are open sessions. The Rules Committee has certainly become much more liberal in granting rules than previously was. The subcommittee chairman chairmanship has been opened up to younger members, because now you can hold only one subcommittee chairmanship at a time. I think there were 23 new subcommittees that were opened up. There is a provision in the caucus rules where can object, members of a committee can object to actions of the chairman, and by vote in the caucus, the chairman can be forced to re-elect to an election by the caucus. So I think that you find a great many changing feelings about seniority, about the power of the person who is a chairman or a subcommittee chairman. And what we have to keep remembering is that the seniority system was itself a reform. To carry away with our new reforms that they're going to solve all the problems. But I think there's still the solid background of people who have been members of the House for a long number of years and who have great sense of history and understanding. Associations with people who feel the same way that they do about legislation and government, so that they're able to cross some party lines one way or the other.
Do you belong to any of the democratic organizations like the study group and research organization?
I subscribe to the study group's analyses. Excellent. They supported me during the campaign.
But isn't the Democratic Research Organization in effect sort of an extension of the old Southern Caucus?
Bullets. And well, then there's a new group, you know.
UDC, I remember that.
Sounds like United Dogs of the Confederacy.
That's how I remember it. United Democrats of Congress.
Bernie Sisken, Noah Sullivan, Gillis Long, they were good people who are behind it. But seriously, I did feel that various members of all the organizations had elected Hale majority leader, and that all of them have been very specifically helpful and kind to me in my campaign, and I didn't think that I should belong to any group.
What we're trying to get at is, does the South act
very good attender at the Democratic Caucus? Is there still a Southern Bloc?
No, does the Southern delegation, if you want to call it that, act as a block on issues other than, say, those dealing with busing or essentially racial matters, economic issues?
If they do, I'm not aware of it. I'm sure they must. But since I'm not a member, I don't have no way of knowing whether they have meetings to discuss, you know, what they're going to do in caucus or on the floor or whatever.
Is there anything such as a women's movement in politics in Louisiana that's at least distinctive from any traditional role women have played in politics, which has always been some role in politics in the South anyway?
Always, and in Louisiana, the women were really the ones with the young people in the aftermath of the Louisiana scandals who set up the sort of organizational structure for political participation and for the registration drives.
I have an image of two different, and sometime merging, but two different reform groups in Louisiana. One has been sort of a reform group, more concerned with corruption and clean government, basically business-oriented conservatism. Also, another reform group that's been a progressive on social issues but been concerned with, quote, clean government. And that the two sometimes get together, but that they're also two distinct groups.
Yes, that's a very, very excellent analysis. And I think that the there is a third group that belongs to both bodies. Well, but this conservative business group really grew up as being an anti-long group, and that was one of the difficulties of the young people at the time that Hale came along. Was when I said that they couldn't really identify in their desire to be a very specific group. It was because they didn't want to be identified as long or anti-long, because you immediately had people for and against you on both sides. And it was something they felt superseded those difficulties. But then later on, the members of the People's League did become absorbed into the factions of their choice.
Is there any kind of women's caucus in the Congress?
No. We meet informally, and there are some issues on which we would naturally feel a tremendous compatibility, like the child abuse law this year. I do feel that Pat Schroeder and Liz Holtzman were more or less instrumental in having treatment for the abusers incorporated into the law. Particular insight that I think came from their background of community work that was brought to the bill. And the other women members naturally supported them very strongly. You're elected as the representative of your district. You're not elected as a woman. And all of us have sophisticated districts with myriad problems. And it's very natural that we would all be sponsoring the Truth in Lending Amendment against discrimination and credit because of sex America status. And my first amendment on banking and currency committee was a similar one about small business loans to individuals and to businesses. But we have no caucus as such. But we do meet. We did give a baby shower for Yvonne. The women, the congressional members are a very special lot. And the freshmen are remarkable. I think Barbara Jordan is one of the outstanding members of Congress. She's going to make a real name for herself. Crackerjack constitutional lawyer. And she certainly holds the affection and respect of the Texas delegation. She's on judiciary.
Is there anything we haven't covered?
Maybe that says something about politics in the South.
First woman member
from Louisiana saying this about the first black woman who's ever been elected from the old Confederacy.
I was going to ask you about that. If you think about that, what does it mean? Like Jack went to the presidential prayer breakfast this morning.
Let me ask you about it. Someone had told you 20 years ago that Senator Stennis would be introducing a black congressman from Georgia to congressional at the presidential prayer breakfast in 1974. What would you have thought?
Well, because you've put the personalities into it, it's probably all for my answer. I think Senator Stennis would have done it with the same grace 20 years ago as he did with today. And Andy Young is an exceptional young man. Very precious because he was born and reared in New Orleans and his mother was a wonderful civic leader. But I serve on Bank and Currency Committee with him, and he has such a solid head as well, of course.
I got to know him when I was covering the Charleston hospital strike, and he was just fantastic.
He is. It's such an interesting experience. We went to the International Monetary Fund meeting in Nairobi. And Andy said that when he was a youngster and went to the ministry, he wanted to be a missionary in Africa. And first we stopped in Dakar in Senegal. It was French West Africa, which is so similar to southern Louisiana. We eat the same good food, drink the same strong coffee, and much of the flora and fauna is alive. But the openness and friendliness of the people is very similar. And I was really very gratified at Andy's response, because what he wanted to do was to go out to the Peace Corps villages, which we did too. Another Louisianian, Mr. Labatt, who is the director of the Peace Corps in Senegal, had asked to stay on an additional 2 years, but just been granted the permission. And to have him talking about his children having now survived the cultural shock of living in Africa, he wanted to stay on for another 2 years. I think it would be very good for white Americans to hear. I think Andy Young has far, far places to go in the political world if he wishes to stay in it.
Hey, we're going to
see him. This is related to the book, but it's being
married. And I don't have a wife to help me. Which is, I have great admiration for congressional wives. It's a profession all in itself to be a congressional wife. They're extremely helpful to the progress of government.
Is there anything we haven't covered that you particularly want to comment on?
Well, if at the expense of sounding as though I'm bragging, I do think that Southerners bring a certain graciousness and understanding in the individual relationships that sometimes alter the course of legislation or affect it, that is unique among the other sections, the various sections of the country.
Do you think that situation this morning was an example of that?
I do.
So that would you consider that to be an unchanging aspect of Southern politics that in the past has been overlooked because of negative factors?
I really do. And I think that the relationships between the races really more genuine in its friendliness in itself.
What kind of rapport exists, relationships between Southern members of Congress, white Southern members of Congress, and black members of Congress who are not from the South?
Well, Well, I really think you'd have to talk about it on an individual basis, because I think, for instance, Charlie Diggs has a lot of Southern friends. His portrait was being hung in the committee room yesterday or the day before, and the chairman's portrait was installed. And I was in George Mahon's office, and he said, that sometimes I forget the hanging of portraits, but I really want to go to Charlie Diggs because I wanted to know that I like him. And not at all incidentally, this is unproperly hung, of course, but George, the same place that did George's portrait for the committee room, did this of Hale, and I was in his office getting it. And I think it's an absolutely remarkable likeness. I just stuck it here so it would be on the floor. It's got to be recreated and set home. But I think that you find these individual relationships that are very warm, very cordial. Ralph Metcalf has a lot of Southern friends. I could probably think of a great many others, but those are certainly two who come to my mind right away. Ralph's mother was from Shreveport, Louisiana. One of the California black members was born in Louisiana. I don't know which one it is. But, and, you know, it's an individual thing. I don't think there's any animosity because they're black, or any special relationship because they're black. Tough body, you know, the House of Representatives.
End interview, Lindy Boggs, no more transcription, this tape.